Welcome to the third preseason Supercoach Coach podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week we're joined by FB Donkey.
G'day, everyone.
And we've got special guest, first for the season, Faz. Welcome back, mate.
G'day, guys. Great to be back. Hello, listeners. Looking forward to another season of Supercoach.
Of course, Faz is one of our regulars, comes on along with Dunny. So it's good to have you back on for season 2016, mate. Hope you've been spending a bit of time picking your team so far.
Yep, it's starting to come together. I'm sure as soon as I show Marco, there'll be about 10 changes that need to happen.
And I'm feeling good at the moment, mate. We all caught up at the footy on the weekend to watch the Bombers smash the Blues. It might be the only win we get all year, but nice win by 10 goals.
Yeah, but a good old-fashioned suburban footy down at Princess Park. It was a good day.
Yep, the lines were horrendous and they ran out of Coke at four different stands. But it was very fun and quite a surprising result, like 10-goal margin, boom. Anyway, enough of the weekend and onto this week's show. So it's something that Mark's been obviously excited about already, and you can tell that from our first two podcasts of the season. You're looking forward to the forwards this week, aren't you, Mark?
Yeah, I think the forwards are really going to define how you pick the rest of your team.
So we're going to spend a little bit of time spreading between, you know, the top end guys, the top end premiums who we think can be in the top six forwards for the end of 2016. We're going to look at the mid prices who might break out into that category. And we're also going to look at the guys under 250K that might deliver you some serious value. So those would be the three categories that the show's broken up into. Just keep in mind that we're not addressing any forward or ruck questions this week, just because the ruck show tends to be a little bit lighter and we like to talk about that forward ruck flexibility in line with your ruck decisions and how much risk you take there and those sorts of things. So we got quite a lot of questions about Kurt Tippett, but unfortunately we won't be visiting him quite yet, although I'm sure we'll get to him fairly soon. Before we start off with this week's show, just want to run through some of the stuff that we've posted on the website over this last week. Don't forget you can sign up to our ranked Supercoach Coach Leagues. So you post your results for last year and any ranking history that you have. And in a couple of weeks' time, I'll put that together and send some league codes out. So those were the ones that ended up, you know, coming third, fourth, and fifth last year. And Faz was in one of those. So if you want to get involved in that, make sure you jump on to supercoachcoach.com.au. We also have the open league codes there, as well as the Supercoach Coach group invite and the Supercoach Coach veterans application link. So if you want to join the Supercoach Coach vets applications at supercoachcoach.com.au. Mark, we also announced last week that we were going to start a campaign during this week's podcast. So do you want to let our listeners know a little bit about what that is?
Sure. So we've been struggling a little bit with the time commitments and the financial costs of running the site. I've got some kids and you've got a pretty stressful new job, mate. And so we are looking for a long-term solution to make sure that the show can keep going. I'm sure that you guys are aware that it does cost us a bit to do this. So we're looking to provide a way that some of the listeners, that if you feel like you're getting value from us, that you might be able to donate to us a little bit to help us out so we can just keep the show going and make it to our 10th year.
Yeah, it's a similar concept to Kickstarter. Basically, you just say, we're willing to sponsor the show for $1 for each show that you put out, and just gives you an opportunity to support us. So I just want to emphasize that we're going about it this way because we want the show to keep being free for everyone out there. We like that, you know, it doesn't cost the average person to just give our podcast a go and a listen. That's how we grow into this point in the first place. But we just want to give you guys an avenue to be able to support us. So if you appreciate the show, appreciate the advice, and have a dollar to spare, that allows you to donate to us. So we'll post the links on social media over the weekend, and they'll be updated on supercoachcoach.com.au, and we'll probably mention it a few times throughout the season. So
dollar a show doesn't seem too much.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, again, completely optional. And, you know, thank you to our listeners for tuning in for 2015 last year and joining us again this year. And if you can support that, that'll be great as well. So look out for that. And we can get into the show, guys. First question, before we actually get into specific players, want to start off by talking about mid-price selection. So we've got a question here from Matthew Grimston. Mid-price selection, trap or good picks? Longer the preseason goes, the more he thinks it's a trap. So just want to bring this question up first up, because last week, the big theme of the show was to dismiss mid-prices. But we also did talk about, you know, mid-prices being slightly more viable in your back line and forward line. So just want to talk about mid-prices within the forward line context. From a brief top-level view, what do you guys reckon about the mid-prices in 2016 in the forward line?
I think it kind of depends on your definition a little bit here. If you're considering the players between 200 and 250,000 as mid-prices, then, which we definitely have done that in the past, then I think that this is a great year to be picking mid-prices, and there are quite a few out there. Realistically, I know that we talked a lot about the 300,000 price point in the midfield last week not being awesome, but there's actually a couple of mid-prices that could work out in the forward line, and that I'd definitely be more inclined to pick in this position, because it's a lot easier for them to reach premium status.
That's the thing. The mid-prices are always the most tempting-looking players out there. A rookie's a little bit dull because you think, oh, he'll just come in, play some games, earn some cash. The mid-prices are the ones that you think, I think I'm on to the next superstar here.
Yeah.
And there's a few guys that we'll get to later in the show, but I think I'm probably trying to direct my attention to the cheaper guys, the guys under the 250K. I know we won't get into the rookies in depth because we're probably a bit too early in the preseason, but from the outset, there looks like there's a few guys that if they can cement a spot in the team, they should be good options too.
Overall, probably agree with, you know, most of your sentiments, but like I mentioned last week, I am looking forward to discussing the mid-price selections this week. It is the position on the ground that lends itself to picking mid-prices along with the back line. So last year, you know, Bontempelli, a few of us were quite negligent and not considering him at all in the preseason, Mark, and he surprised us completely. I want to make sure I don't miss out on that this year. But having said that, still tread with a little bit of caution. So we'll get into the actual players now. And the first question is from at MTownBallers from Twitter. Besides Martin and Barlow, do you see any other standout players in last year's top 20? So we already mentioned Dusty Martin and Michael Barlow in the first preseason show. Barlow was my lock in the forward line and Martin was yours, Mark.
And I think probably changed a little bit on that. I think I'd probably have Barlow just ahead of Martin. But
welcome to the party, mate.
I think that they're both very, very good picks, and it's going to be hard to start without both of those guys because they do have potential to increase their averages even more, and they seem to be pretty safe picks for really good scores.
Yeah, the other standout player that I see and that we've already discussed about is Brett Delidio. So 608,000, priced with an average of 113. Faz, what do you think about him? We haven't got your thoughts on him yet.
Yeah, he's a tempting one. The price is obviously the biggest concern with Lids. It's a lot of money to be dropping on one player. Also, given how strong Dustin Martin is, I don't tend to like to have two players from the one team on the same line.
We talked about Crouch and O'Meara last week, that if they had full pre-seasons, then you could pick them as a mid-pricer. I think Delidio is almost a bit the same, that because he's fully priced, it's difficult to pick him without having a preseason. He's running, and he'll be right for round one. This sounds a lot like last year, a lot like the year before, where he did start a bit slower. It seems unlikely that he's going to average 120 plus and be 700,000. I think you could probably wait, a bit like Selwood maybe, probably wait and just get him to show some fitness in the real stuff first.
Yep, agree with that. Apart from those three, was there anybody else in that price bracket that you're looking at? So Harley Bunnell was one that we all had last year, 548,000 he's priced at this year. That puts him at the fifth highest averaging player for the year. Do you guys reckon he's worth the chance in the new Fremantle colours?
As you said, had him last year, and I think I held on to him a bit longer than a lot of people did, so I feel like I got the burn of Harley Bunnell a bit worse than some. But there's definitely reasons to pick him, I think. The three seasons before last year, he was averaging around the 95 mark, all three of them, and jumped it up to 102 average last year. And he's, you know, coming into the prime of his career. We know what a talent he is. And if his off-field issues are behind him now that he's over at Freo, that's obviously something that we don't really know. We have to take a gamble on that. But if Ross has been able to, I guess, get control of him and get him focused on his footy, then he could be a great player. And I could easily see him scoring 110 across the season.
brilliant player to watch. You could definitely see him averaging that. Again, the issues for me with Benalla, the preseason issues. He's struggling with a calf. Haven't really seen him. Definitely haven't seen him in the NAB, and he's still not back at full training, I think. So I just think it'd be another wait and see is probably your best bet. But he is fun to have in your team, and he could do really, really well at Freo.
The last one I want to mention before we move on to the next tier of players, Chaddy Wingard. He's burnt me so much in the past. He's priced at 527,000 off averaging 98. I think I picked him in a year where he was priced at about 90, and I thought he could average 98, and he proceeded to average 80. So he's really hurt me in the past, and he can be inconsistent. And he tends to score in patches on ground as well. He tends to have a big quarter where he can kick three goals and a chunk of points come in that way. How do you feel about Wingard at that price, Mark? You obviously have been thinking about him.
Yeah, he's probably the one that I've maybe been convinced around to or that I'm starting to think of a lot more. Wasn't in my early sides, but I mean, last year I didn't think he had that great a year. I know he probably had a stronger second half of the year and kicked some goals, but he didn't seem like at full potential yet last year, and Port had a much tougher draw and weren't winning as many games. So this year with Port's early easy draw, I think it's a really good idea to try and get one or two of their players in. And Chad's the seventh most expensive forward, averaging 97, or nearly 98. I think he's got another 5 to 10 points in him. So he's a match winner. He's not in my team, but I definitely strongly consider him. I know that he has also had some issues over the preseason, and that's why we haven't seen him yet, but apparently he has been in full training for a month or so.
If there's nothing else to add on these top 20 players, we will move on. All right, next question we have is from @Reedy_Sim. He's still a really expensive top line player, actually. That's Dane Zorko at 100.64. And the other player he asked about, who's a little bit more mid-priced, is Mitch Robinson. Do either of those Brisbane boys tempt you?
Not all that much, I guess. Zorko has averaged, you know, 100 a few times now, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him do it again. I just don't see him jumping up all that much. And then with Mitch Robinson last year with I think it was a 93 average, that was a career high for him. So I can't see him going up any further again. And I think that's sort of what you're looking at. If you're paying that much for a player, you'd want them to be getting better, not just sort of staying where they are.
And we have seen Mitch Robinson average 90 in the past. So this is not something, you know, out of scope for him. It's not like he's shown extreme improvement. He's always been able to rack up the ball somewhat in the midfield as a winger, or pushing into contests and getting some contested possessions and then moving forward and kicking some goals. But whether
he's
he can...
just such a tool, though.
And whether he can step up in a team like Brisbane, I think Mitch Robinson could average 100 if he was playing in a team that was potentially threatening for a premiership. But Mitch Robinson having to stand up on himself and carry all these players on his back, I don't quite see him in that class of player, especially in terms of his disposal efficiency. I think that would probably rule him out a little bit. Zorko, Mark, any thoughts on him? He's been in and out of Supercoach size for years now.
It's a really interesting one with those Brisbane boys, because you think that they've been down the bottom of the ladder for a few years, but you've seen Zorko and Rockliffe and a couple of others and Hanley types and Martin average really, really well, like a top four team sort of. They've had a bunch of players that have actually been able to have quite good averages. So from that perspective, it's a bit tricky to pick how it's going to go. Zorko's run home last year was insane. His last sort of 10 or 11 games, he had some really, really big ones in there. But he can be a bit up and down. So I'm a bit reluctant to pick him just from that perspective, that generally he has been cheaper at some stage during the season.
The next section that we have coming up now is mid-prices who have averaged well, but potentially can take the next step up to be in that top six bracket that we try and target. As was mentioned right at the start of the show, in terms of mid-price selections and how we like to pick in the forward line this year, most of us will be looking at absolute top-end options and some cheaper value options. Faz mentioned he likes picking guys under 300k earlier on. That means that these players that we're about to discuss are sitting in quite an awkward price bracket. And as a result of that, we tend to be a little bit more dismissive of them because they carry a higher risk for your team because they cost more money. And basically, you're punting on a breakout. We went through this last week.
But you can punt on a breakout. Like, it can work out. You're sort of trapped in the thinking of Bontempelli last year and missing out on that one. That there are times where it can work. And if you're going to do it, just maybe pick one of these guys rather than two or three of them.
Absolutely. For the purposes of our show, just understand that we're probably going to check off a few of these guys a bit quicker than normal, just because about 80% of the questions related to players within the 400 to 500k price bracket, they're very tempting to look at. Potential is enormous when you're sitting in preseason and just looking forward. So in order to get through a lot of them that people have asked about, Zach Merritt, Devin Smith, Stephen Motlop, the list goes on. Because we've set this premise, we'll check those options off pretty quickly if it's obvious why we're not picking them this year. So we'll start off with this question from Fabregasto. Is Sam Gray the real deal? Averaged 111 over the last six games of 2015. Did well in NAB too with players back in. So he's priced at 480,000 off an average of 89, playing only 10 games last year. Makes him a fairly high-risk pick, and I'm pretty skeptical about somebody who costs that much and has that limited history.
Yeah, it's a very small sample size. I think if it was even 420, you might consider him a bit stronger. It could work out. At his price, I think there's too much risk.
Devin Smith, we've got a question about him from Jeremy Andruski. Will he get enough midfield time to be lifting his average? So priced at 480,000, you know, fifth year this year, could potentially be a breakout year. So I don't mind this selection as much. Mark, do you see him potentially stepping out?
You'd expect him to be up to nearly 100 at one point in the season, so I don't think he's going to be a bad pick. He's been pretty durable as well. I think that if you didn't actually have genuine midfielders available in the forward line and you just had to pick a forward line of super coaches, he'd actually be a really good pick. But there's a lot of other midfielders down there that are going to get much bigger midfield minutes than him.
Next question is about Zach Merritt, and this question is from Simon Hiscock on Facebook. So thank you for your question, Simon. We also got heaps of other questions about Zach Merritt, and obviously he had a pretty strong showing on the weekend, hence our eyes all drawn toward him.
Zachy.
Yeah, he averaged 88.47 last year and priced at 477,000. So he did have a good year last year. He is priced quite expensively. Is he a viable F3, or are we expecting too much from him to, you know, step up realistically to that top six bracket to be a worthwhile pick? Faz, your thoughts on Zach Merritt?
Probably just a bit too expensive again. It's going to be a bit of the issue with these guys that are at the top end of this bracket that we're looking at. That, yeah, as you said, you've got to really push out and become a keeper. That you can't get a guy like this and then have to upgrade him later in the season. And I'm also a little concerned. Zach's only in his, he'll be in his third year in the system this year, and obviously we won't know until round one what the games against Essendon are going to look like. But there could be when some of the top four teams are feeling like flexing their muscles, it could be a bit of a beatdown. And for that reason, Zach might have to sort of have a few rests throughout the season, things like that. They just won't be getting the protection in the midfield that he was getting last year. So I'd probably just be a bit skeptical to spend that much money on him.
Maybe a good pick next year.
I think the bomber ceiling this year is a worthwhile call out, especially considering we'll be picking a fair few other bombers. Next question is from Wally Wallace on Facebook. He also mentioned Zach Merritt, but the other two that he's brought up are Motlop and Alan Christensen. So a Geelong guy and a former Geelong guy. I'll address Christensen first. Averaged 86.5 last year and actually came in the top five for Brisbane Best and Fairest. That was off a limited preseason, and we've seen his scoring potential before. I think pretty similar to what you mentioned before about Devin Smith, Mark. In a competition of only forwards, I'd be quite tempted by him. But considering there's some midfielders playing in the forward line, seems a bit risky considering he plays for Brisbane. I think if you played for a top eight contender and you had a little bit more certainty about Brisbane's performance and how much of the pie they'd win on a week-to-week basis, I'd be a bit more confident in him. But, you know, they get some games where they're just going to get beat on by a top-four club, and scoring will be minimised in those games. And I worry that those types of games will drag his average down over the course of the year. With this type of price tag, as with the players that we've already discussed, you need to get them to average realistically 100 to be a good pick. So I don't see 15 points in him. Motlop, I've seen a few people talking about him being that one, maybe mid-price selection player that can break out. We've seen him average hundreds in patches before. And I know you've asked me about Motlop in the past, Mark.
I have. I managed to jump from 80 to 88 in average last year. I think he came home to finish second in the best and fairest. If you look at his second half of the season, it was much, much better last year. But except for one game against Carlton, he actually was pretty consistent throughout the year. I guess the concerns were that watching the telecast on the weekend that Lingy said he came back a bit overweight from the preseason, but he has done extra sessions and caught up. But the commentators were saying he looked a bit rusty and he was a bit fumbly around the ball. I definitely expect him to have a good season. I think he can average 95. The question is, can he get up to 100? I think he's someone that I've definitely considered because I'd like to have him in my team because he's a good player to watch.
All right, we'll move on to the next question here from at Rumballs. Thoughts on Stringer or Billings as an F3? So, again, this awkward mid-price bracket, Stringer 425 and Billings 455. So, Billings had a particularly impressive NAB game over the weekend, kicked some great goals. Mark, thoughts on either of these?
Stringer looks like it could be an absolute gun of the competition. The Doggies have a much more difficult draw this year. I think he scored over 100 like three times last year, which is not a very good sign if someone's going to make a big enough jump to be a premium forward. He'd need to make a huge jump based on his scoring last year. I think Billings is a very interesting one. He definitely has the potential to average 95 to 100 early in his career because he's got a lot of talent and he's can kick some goals and get some ball around the midfield and have some really big games. I think Jack Billings, he interests me, but I think that there's probably too much risk associated with it. I don't think that he's going to really burn me if I don't pick him. It'd be a fun one to watch.
Definitely has that ability to really impact the scoreboard. I think there's been a couple of times in his career where he's kicked bags of four or so I could see it happening. But maybe if he was at Stringer's price tag, I might consider him a bit more. I think it's just going to be so hard to crack the top six in the forward line this year with the amount of good mid-forwards that are down there. You know, guys that we haven't even touched on this episode, like Lee Montagna, because I think we'd all agree he's too expensive to start with. But, you know, you'd really want to be scoring around that, I think, almost 105 mark to be up there.
Next question is from Geordie Bar Buddy. Yes or no? So, don't know if it's as simple as a yes or no because of all the emotion attached to Buddy, but give it a go, Mark.
No for me, mate. Just the fact that he hasn't played more than 19 games since 2009. And we know that he's got ongoing injury concerns, the mental health concerns from last year. He seems to be in a good place at the moment, but it's always going to be a risk factor just from a fantasy perspective. He's definitely underpriced. You could, and especially with some more midfield minutes, he has a very high ceiling and he could completely go on a run. And I think that if you're willing to gamble, Buddy is definitely someone you should consider. And I definitely don't want to rule him out, but he won't be in my team.
No for me as well, but can understand taking a punt on him. I think of all the players that we've talked about so far, he's probably the most attractive to me, to be honest.
Because the upside is bigger than all the other ones we've talked about.
Yeah. I mean, the guy has averaged 110 as a forward before, so...
Yeah, 115 in 2012, so that's huge.
Got to look at that and lick your lips just a little. Next question is from Kane Arnold, or at Canis3038 on Twitter. We haven't seen him yet, but Toby Green, is he going to get any of those precious midfield minutes? So, Mark, we have talked about him before when we were mentioning new midfield forwards in our first podcast of the season. Thoughts on Green, have they been updated or sitting's fairly similar considering he hasn't played yet?
Yeah, because he hasn't played yet, it's very hard to update. I'm a bit worried about how much rotation there is through the Giants midfield as much as anything, and I'm not sure that Green at this point in his career, I don't think he demanded to be played in the midfield that many minutes last season, and there's probably, I know that Treloar's left, but even potentially more options in the GWS midfield this year with them recruiting a few young blokes and some of their top draft picks getting even better. So I think he's very, very risky pick coming off an 82 average last year.
All right, next question is from Kyle Redenbach. Super keen on Dugowie and Jesse Hogan, but don't want to fall into the mid-prices trap. Sway my mind either way. So Dugowie priced at 318K, so getting quite a bit cheaper now, and Hogan is quite expensive at 422, price similar to Stringer. Hogan won the best and fairest last year and is arguably the most exciting key position forward I've ever seen come through as a kid. I mean, don't want to hype him up too much, but he's pretty damn exciting. I could just pick him just for the fact that I love cheering for him. I really, really regretted trading him out of my team early because that was painful. Key position forward, Franklin was a maybe at 50K more. Surely we can't be picking a key position forward for Melbourne at 422. Or, you know, he's just potentially legendary status that you might consider him.
That'd have to be some serious season. He's a little bit older. He's 21. So for his second season, that's a bit older than most young guys. And he does seem to be able to compete at the level. At the price, that would be a very courageous pick, you might say.
Courageous. I like it.
I mean, you'd think that probably at some point in his career we would be picking him and he will get up to the premium level at some stage. But, I mean, it's very hard to pick the key forwards in Supercoach as a general rule.
Jordan DeGoey is a little bit more attractive to me, actually, out of those two, because just the price tag being down at that 318K mark, he's borderline mid-price to a cheap pick. He, yeah. In his first season with Collingwood, got 16 games, averaged 59 across the season. But I think from memory, he got hit by the sub rule, got subbed off a few times or started as the sub, whatever the case was. So, you know, obviously with the abolition of that this year, he'd be a chance to spend majority of the game on the field. And I think that he looks like he's in their best 22. The other thing that I liked was that he played 16 games, and after round 7, it was only one game that he missed for the rest of the season. So he definitely seems to have cemented a spot in their best 22.
Yeah, it's just what role he can cement.
Yeah, I think he occupies a weird sort of space for me. I know it's rather arbitrary, but, you know, when a player's priced under $300,000, I can say that. It breeds a bit more confidence than the awkward 318. I want to be fairly confident of them breaking out into at least a 90, realistically, you know, 95, hopefully 100 type range. And I don't know if he's quite at that point. So based off that, it's pretty hard to pick him. And there's some cheaper options that we're going to talk about in a little bit, and some even cheaper options that we'll talk about in the rookie show, which we will reference today as well.
I'm definitely considering DeGoey, just want to put it out there.
Okay, all right. Maybe I haven't watched enough of his games for his short history in the AFL, but yeah, just very awkward price point. You want to have some confidence about that. Hall from the Gold Coast Suns is the question we've got from Nora on Facebook.
Did have an awesome end last season where his last six games were all over 90, and he had 150, 127, and 139 in that period. I know that Swallow's out for half a season now, and we're unsure on Amira's fitness, so maybe there still might be a few spots in the Suns midfield where he might get some minutes in there. Seems like a very, very risky pick to me, though, and six games, a bit like Sam Gray, that's not much form to be going off.
It reminds me of when I used to pick players right at the start, you know, my first few years of Supercoach, where I'd pick a player in his rookie year and then get kind of attached to him and want to pick him again this season. You know, the cons that you highlighted, Mark, are enough to keep me steering clear. And there's a lot of players that we talked about in this price bracket in terms of talent, but doesn't quite have that shine on him that you want to be tempted into by these mid prices. Last question here is from at GG Hippo. This is the complete opposite from Aaron Hall. It's a guy who all he has is pizzazz, Daisy Thomas. We get sucked into him nonstop. BKB or at GG Hippo on Twitter has asked, is this a third or fourth year we've considered him hashtag lost count, Mark? I think we definitely have lost count. But, you know, he's in a tasty price bracket, and, you know, quite a few people did like his performance in the first NAB Cup last week.
Yeah, he actually seemed to play proper midfield minutes and actually run around the ground properly. And listening to the reports of him over the preseason, it does seem like this is the first one where he's actually coming in fit. He's over the ankle injury. I know, I mean, the start of last year, he got super unlucky to do his shoulder in the first minute of that game, but he also was still carrying that ankle injury. But he does seem to have recovered. He's had three seasons where he's averaged 95 plus-ish, and including one at about 110. So only because I've been burnt so many times, I would be pretty tough for me to pick him, but I'm still tempted again, mate. I know it seems silly after being burnt so much, but there's a lot of reasons why he seems like he could be a good pick again, and could justify the money spent on him a little bit this year. Probably the biggest drawback for me is that he's playing for Carlton, and I know that they played their juniors on the weekend, but I worry about how many games they're going to win this year.
I think at 308,000, if he averaged 95, or you thought he'd average a minimum of 95, you know, if you didn't think he'd be able to hit that 100, in other words, would he still be a worthwhile pick?
I think so. I think that that's close enough to a premium that, because you're saving trades and you're getting, like, I mean, Wingard at the moment averaged 97 last year, and he's the seventh highest priced forward. So I think that that'd be close enough to being premium status. Mm.
Question to you then, Faz. What percentage would you give on Daisy hitting a 95 mark for this year?
Good question. I'd say I'd put it low. I don't know where the number would be, but probably around the 25 to 20. I don't know whether I'm going up or down from the 25.
Yeah.
I think his best foot is probably behind him with the ongoing injury issues. He's already 28 now, almost 29. I'd be surprised to see him get back to the best footy that he played while he was at Collingwood.
Mark, percentage for Daisy hitting 95 this year?
50. Going to be a bit more optimistic than Faz. And so then you start getting into, is it worth the risk on that? Yeah, I think that he's not going to get back to his very best that he played at Collingwood, but that doesn't mean that he can't get back to some really good form.
I'm pretty similar to you, Mark. I reckon there's a decent shot he could get back up there. I mean, he's getting paid a bit. Surely there's a little bit of guilt playing into some hard training and off-season running. But, you know, having said that, I don't know if 50% chance of just hitting 95 is a good enough figure to be picking somebody like Daisy Thomas. Anyway, we'll move on to this last question in this price category from Cam Locke on Twitter. Best mid-pricer / POD. So, out of the guys that we talked about, maybe a favorite or a favorite two. Faz, I'll put you on the spot first.
I'm going to go with Buddy. When I first looked, I saw he had been ages since he's played a full season, but the fact that he got 115 in a season is just so tempting for a guy that's at that price. So at the moment, I've got Dollhouse in my team, so I might be bumping him down to Buddy and then got a bit of cash to spend elsewhere.
Mark?
I think he's still a pod, so I hope he counts into this, but my favorite one in there would be Wingard. And if you're going for the real cheap ones, I don't love the 450 to 500 price bracket. I think I'd prefer to have Degoe or Daisy in my team.
Okay. I think my two would be Buddy, if I was spending in that 450 to 500 range. And otherwise, it'd probably be Daisy. Even though it's not a high percentage, I still have him as more likely a hit 95 than Degoe or Hogan or Hall this year. So to wrap up this price category, percentage chance of you actually starting Buddy Franklin first?
Well, he's just gone in now as we're talking, but 50%? Yeah.
Coin flip. And Mark, you know, Wingard is, you know, in that probably upper price bracket, but the chance of you starting somebody like Degoe or Daisy?
Ooh, that's probably close to 50 as well. I just want to, just so I can have it on record, I want to put Jack Martin's name out there. Just want to say, in 6 months' time that I called it.
Okay. A good way to put it in, because I'm not going to remember this if it doesn't work out, Mark. So, good work there. I think, for me, Daisy, probably less than a 50% chance. Buddy, at this point, still a bit of a coin flip. The reason I asked that question is because I want to draw attention to the fact that even though these guys are at the top of our list in this price bracket, we're still barely a coin flip to pick most of these guys. So I think Mark's advice at the start of this show is good and is pretty similar to when we were talking about mid prices in the midfield show last week. You probably want to be picking maybe one of these guys. Apart from that, look for the top averaging players and look for the players that can deliver the most value. They're probably under 300K.
Guns and rookies.
Yep. It's a good, safe way to start off the season. You don't rule yourself out that way, and you can trade your way to success. So it's a good way to start. So the last price category that we're going to look at are the players under 300K now. And so just want to preface this by saying there's a lot of players to consider. There's players like Cockatoo, Duggan, players like Anderson, Wells. How we've chosen to pick it is basically anybody who's had a few more years in the system that's priced above 200K. Anybody under 200K I don't have in discussion tonight, and that will be covered in the rookie show. And some of the second year rookies will cover there as well. So I want to emphasize between the three of us that we have a lot of these players picked. We have a lot of forwards under the 250K range, and I'd be interested to do a straw poll after we finish this podcast to find out what your breakdown sits at, 3 weeks out from lockout. But this is very much a focus in the forward line. This is where we're going to try and save some money and hopefully, you know, be able to fund that expensive midfield we talked about last week, Mark.
Yeah, that's right. You got to go where the rookies are or where the cheap players are, and I think there might be a few in the forward line this year.
All right, so first question, at Throttle Finger, Wells worth a go if healthy? Are we better off just going to a rookie? For most of these players, that'll be the question. Are they worth that extra 90K? Wells averaged 56, played only the 2 games last year, and as a result is super cheap. But we've seen the potential that he has. He's 31 years old now. Where do you guys sit on him?
I personally think he's an absolute lock if he's fit. North will definitely use his run. He's not going to average 110, and that's fine. If he averages 80-plus, I'd be very happy with that, especially if he can do it at the start of the year and just get 7 or 8 good games out at the start of the year. I don't need him to be fit for the whole year. I think the fact that there's a lot of other players between 150,000 and 250,000 that look like decent picks this year gives you a bit of insurance. If he injures his calf in the first 5 minutes, you can just trade him to someone else.
And I mean, that's why we're a little bit more forgiving about these players, is from how you're talking about him, Mark, he's acting as a stepladder for you and not somebody that you have to keep throughout the season. If that happens, that'll be a bonus.
Yeah, and I'm really not anticipating keeping him at all. I'm treating him very much like a rookie.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of an expensive rookie, you compare him to a number one draft pick, even though he's 31, with his experience and history in the game and his ability to score that we know of, that makes him pretty damn tempting. Faz, what are your thoughts on him?
Really like him as a pick, and obviously as a player, he's great to watch. If he's named round one, he'll be in my team. I think that's such a cheap price to play for a player that we know is such a jet when he gets out there.
Anderson is somebody that we considered last year, who's also under the 250 price bracket. Also plays for North Melbourne. Forward mid flexibility. Thoughts on him for season 2016? A bit of issues over job security, I'm guessing, because North have still quite a deep midfield. But then again, you know, he would have moved over, you would have thought, for some sort of increased opportunity.
And they gave up pick 15 for him, so they've obviously got pretty high hopes for him. He did show a couple of things in his last game to say that he would at least be given a shot first up, but he is a bit of an impact player. I really worry about what Anderson's scoring potential is. Is he more like a 50-60 player? And if he is, then are we better off just paying a bottom price rookie price for someone else? So yeah, I'm a little bit more reluctant on Anderson at the moment.
Yeah, I was one of the fools who ended up picking him last year, so he's definitely got the black bands from me.
Yeah. John Simkin is the other player to mention. Essendon player. We watched him play on the weekend. Disposal probably left a bit to be desired, but he's previously been on Sydney, Hawthorn, and Geelong's lists, all very competitive lists, and he's here as a top-up player. So you would think that he's got a bit of opportunity, but job security still isn't 100% secured. How many games do you actually see Simpkin playing for you guys? Is that too hard to call?
It's definitely too hard to call. I think Essendon's best 22 is very much in doubt, and there's 10 players fighting for 5 spots, so I expect him to be given first shot, given the way he's played in the VFL the last couple of years and really dominated at that level. I do worry about his scoring potential as well. I expect him to be a little bit better than Anderson, though. So I have him ahead of Anderson, not picking him overly confidently and not expecting amazing things from him.
Watching him on the weekend, I'd prefer us to just give kids a run. I think we've got a few guys like, you know, Cooney, and we brought Craig Bird in, and those guys that can hopefully help out the younger guys in there, and I'd rather just give a game to a youngster.
Might be right.
Yeah, I'm not overly confident on his scoring ability anyway if he gets on park, so I'm not a big fan of him. I think I'd even have Anderson above Simkin right at this moment. Last question here is from Dean Phelps. Thoughts on Dan Menzel, also mid-priced, played last year the 2 games. Did average reasonably well, 69, I think kicked 4 goals in 1 game against Collingwood. $260,000 is his starting price tag.
Are you keeping a lid on it?
Get excited, boys. I think even as a Geelong supporter, he seems fairly risky. But, you know, under 300K, all he has to do is, you know, potentially have a 120 game where he just happens to kick 4 goals to be a decent enough selection. So he could be a decent stepladder. I mean, at least when they can punch out big goals, they can go up in price fairly quickly as well. Very much dependent on preseason form and also the competitiveness of the Geelong team. We don't even know how it's going to settle at the moment, if he's definitely in the best 22. I would guess that he is, but it's still hard to say. Anything to add from either of you two on him?
I just find it interesting that he has the exact same price as his brother, Troy Menzel.
Does he really?
It's amazing, isn't
it? Oh, wow. You're right. That's crazy. And they played different amount of games too. 14 for 48. And
somehow the algorithms worked out.
Spooky. Spooky stuff.
Pick them both.
All right, guys. Is there anything you guys like to add on the forwards before I wrap this up?
Just that I'd probably, as I said before, giving a bit of a look at guns and rookies at this stage, and very interested to do the rookie show in a few weeks on the forwards, because I think that there are a few decent options down there.
All right, and so with that, we'll wrap up this week's show. Just a reminder again, on supercoachcoach.com.au, you can hit up our ranked leagues, our open league codes, our Supercoach Coach group invite, the veterans application. Also look out for our Patreon campaign that will be launched this weekend. So we'll post that on social media. Thank you so much for joining us for this week's show. Massive thanks to Faz for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Look forward to coming back soon.
And Mark, next week, what are we going to talk about?
Maybe we go rucks next week.
Rucks already? Leaving defenders last?
It's up to you, mate, but I think that the defenders is probably going to be the trickiest line to pick. There's probably the most doubt around the rookies in that area, so how many premiums and mid-prices you're going to be looking at. And I think the rucks are a bit more obvious this year, whether it's right or wrong, but they just seem a bit more obvious.
We have got questions about Tippett so far this week, so that'll tie in nicely. We'll do the rucks next week. I like that suggestion. And the defenders the week after. Don't forget, we did the midfield show last week, and our preliminary show was about locks, changes to prizes, the top players on each line. So if you haven't listened to those, you can go ahead and listen to them. And again, thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked us, give us a 5-star review on iTunes or drop us a comment, and just be nice to hear from our community. Some of you are, you know, through the wall of iTunes or podcast app. Thanks, and we'll catch you again next week. See ya.
See you guys.
Bye.
Let's get crazy.